Hey, everybody, welcome back to another installment of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Thank you for tuning in once again, and we are once again happy to just bring another episode to you. We had a lot of fun on this one. So let's get to the sponsors real quick. We got Manskirt Brewing located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Just an awesome craft brewery located in the old bank building there on Main Street in Hackettstown. Go have a pint. Go play some games. Listen to some music. Check out the murals on the wall. Go see Joe in his Manskirt. Tell him you heard about us, heard about them on Verbal Shenanigans. It's just a really great place. They got their Blonde Bastard still on tap. 8.5 Summer Monstrosity. Make sure you go check that out as the summer days tend to dwindle down here. Go check out Manskirt Brewing. Wolf Nation. Wolf Nation is an apparel company that we are very happy to work with. They're up-and-coming designer apparel, WULF. That is Wake Up, Live Free, Wolf Nation. It's only a dream if you're not pursuing it. They just have apparel for men, women, children, dogs, you name it. Great sweatpants, sweatshirts, hats, snapbacks, sweaters. They're coming out with all different designs, really trying to get up and off the ground. Go check out Wolf Nation at wolfnation.rocks, WULF. That is Wake Up, Live Free Apparel. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Every week in New Jersey and beer bars and breweries all over the state, we host trivia. You can win prizes to breweries. You can win prizes to the restaurant. And it's just a good time out. You can be in last place and still win a prize. So it's just a great time out. They also do craft beer bingo now in various locations. So check it out. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Today on the show, we have model and former figure skater and poet. She just released a new book, so you got to go check her out. We have Miss Elizabeth Pipko on the podcast. Very fun, very informative to the life of a model and some of the trolls that people face and whatnot. So she was a really fun guest. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Elizabeth Pipko, author of About You, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Good to be back, Mike Berlew. Good to be back, sort of, kind of.
Somewhat, whatever.
But hello, everybody, and welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, a show that we put out.
Yes. Hear that, ladies? We put out.
We do. And it's, unfortunately, nobody emails with us.
Yeah. I mean, eventually that advertisement will work, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But anyway, guys, if you're tuning in for the first time, I am Scott. That is Mike down there in the Peach State, Georgia. And each week we put out for the last 2 years, really, I've had a guest every week, and we put out a show with interesting guests, and we also slightly try to entertain you. So, welcome to the podcast.
We aim high.
So
going very low.
Yeah, so we aim high, but always hit low.
Yeah.
But so it's good to be back. Sort of, like I said, I was on vacation, so I don't think there was any break. There might be a week off by the time this comes out, but it's kind of good to be back. You know how vacation is. It's like you look forward to it, you have a blast while you're there. By the end of it, you're kind of like, okay, I can go home, and then you get home and you go to work and you go, man, I miss vacation.
Yeah, the blah kind of moment where it's like, no, this can't be the rest of my life. It should be more that other thing and then less of this thing.
Yeah. Like, there's always that feeling like, oh, okay, it's nice to be home after traveling for a week or so and, like, hanging out. And, you know, every day can't be, like, a party and whatnot. But then, like, the instant work hits, you go, man, I miss everything about last week.
Yeah, and like the first little horrible thing or something like that, like somebody just comes up to you and say hi, you're like, ugh.
No, I
didn't feel like talking to you today, Therese, so no, I'm going back on vacation.
Yeah, goodbye. Yeah. But vacation was good. It was the vacation I go on every year with the 40, I think we were at 43 family members this year.
Okay.
So you picture that all basically in one giant house with a couple cabins next to it, and my family is nuts in the sense that everything is like organized down to a T, like as far as what your jobs are. Like your job, like there's a job chart on the wall, so it might be like, Berlew, you need to sweep the floor by the door on Tuesday. Like everything, okay. Everything is organized. Everything is organized. Who brings what? We eat meals together. It's a little crazy.
Mm-hmm. You have to check on the index to see which door in question I have to sweep by. You know, remember that one year I went by the front door and your mom chewed me out and all?
Well, it's funny you say that. Like, my mom is one of the, like, the job Nazis. Like, she's she's on top of, like, if you miss your job, she'll be like, Scott, you know your job is blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yes, Mom, I know I have to wipe down the bar. Like, that's that's the big thing. But, you know.
And Tara was talking about how dirty the bar was last night, Scott. I'm just telling you.
And I looked at the chart, and you know whose job it was? Yours.
Yours, yeah.
But it's like it's so spread out during the week that I almost rather have like one day where I have all the jobs, and then I'm off for the rest of the week. Because it's almost harder to remember when it's such a little job. Like, but it's cool. It's cool. It's a tradition that's been going on before I was even born. So this has got to be in the 40, 50 years they've been going.
And, okay.
So it's cool. That's cool. It's good to be back.
So let me ask you, of the 43 that showed up, of the people who didn't show up, who was the most talked about Brennan?
Well,
like the one who's like, oh, thank God, Daryl didn't show up.
Well, not pretty much the whole crew showed up this year. And this is Mom's side, and this is like her cousins, and we pretty much had a full house on Wednesday through Friday. We had our full house where everybody that would possibly come came. So no real absentees this time.
Okay. Did you find an old horn in the attic to honk behind some family member like 2 years ago?
No, it's funny, that horn like disappeared. They took it. They put it somewhere, and I tried to find it last year to kind of recreate, maybe do part two. And those of you who don't know what we're talking about, which is probably all of you, one year I found a old, very old, almost like bicycle-type horn. Like, and you can go on and look up the scare horn video on YouTube. And I just kept scaring my cousin every day or so. But, yeah, that's been gone. I don't know where that horn is, man. The place is
you should have looked at the job chart where it says hide horn from Scott.
I heard the horn yesterday. I don't know how we found it. yeah, so the house is really old. And I know I told you, but the house is like an old inn basically on the lake. It has a lot of history to it. Like the Yinglings used to own it, the Yingling family. Teddy Roosevelt stayed there. So, but it's very, like you could... I bet you if they did like a seance, they would definitely contact some spirits. It's very old, a lot of old furniture. You could still picture it when it was an inn rather than just a building. You could rent the whole thing. Like you could picture where people ate, where there's a bar that's still there that you could tell people that's where they bought drinks, and there's an industrial style kitchen. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. But
I would like to be a part of that seance because I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of ghosts complaining about how you guys don't wear towels around the house or something like that. They're like, come on, man. the afterlife's forever. I don't need to deal with that.
I did something different this week. I went to a place called Revolution Rail.
Okay.
And what it is, about a half hour away. And what it is these bikes that are they're on a old railroad. So we had a four seater where there were 16 of us, so we had four seaters. And I wanted to go because the last two times I tried to go, it was just me and Alex, and it was sold out every time. So I booked it a couple months ago, and it's pretty cool. You kind of sit on the rail and you bike, and then it's about an hour out, and then halfway you take like a 20-minute break, and then they turn the carts around and you go back. But of course, like my cousins, they tell you not to bump each other, to keep distance from each other. We did a pretty good job on the way there. On the way back, I was like, screw this. So I'm like bumping my cousin's car in front of us. I'm picking up branches like as we're going and like getting close enough where I could whip them with like like ferns and things. And then they're like, they're kind of like Mario Karting me. Like they're taking things and throwing them behind and so they would hit us. So
needless to say, they're going to be booked up for the next few years with the Brendans coming up is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a cool experience. It was cool because my mom and dad were able to go. I wasn't sure how they would be able to do it. But it's not strenuous. It's just like it's kind of like being on an exercise bike the whole time. There's not a ton of resistance. And those carts, they have like I think they're like plastic or vinyl wheels. So they're like aluminum carts, so they're not real heavy.
Oh, okay.
But pretty cool, pretty relaxing. Of course, like I said, we made it into a roller derby, but it was. It was a good experience. I would highly recommend it if anybody is up in the Adirondack region.
About how long is the trek up, if you will, on the trail? Like, how far do you go biking?
I think it's about, like, I don't know, maybe like a mile and a half. I think it's the whole thing is like, maybe it's like 3 miles there and back.
Okay.
Maybe 3 miles. I don't know. It's on their website. It's not super long. Like, it never felt like, oh, my God, like, how much further do we have to go? It was like, it was a good enough distance where you're like, okay, that's cool. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. But enough of my vacation. Enough. I got a weird offer the other day.
Really?
So we had a sponsor on the podcast a couple months ago, Sleep Ovation, a mattress company. And I still talk to the guy. We were in talks about doing some, like, trying to do some videos or some man on the street kind of interviews of people and whatnot. So the other day, I get a message from him. He's like, "Hey, would you and your fiance be interested in modeling for one of our ads?"
Hmm. Interesting.
No,
I didn't know mattress model was a thing in this world. But please do continue.
Well, exactly. My first thoughts being mattress modeling. You know, like, am I going to have to be shirtless? Am I going to have to be, you know, in the nude, like maybe with like a cover over me? Like, what are we advertising on this mattress? The comfort of it, the usability of it. But then a lot of things go through my head. Like, I am not one for pictures. Like, I don't love taking pictures that much. I tend to not like half the, like 90% of the pictures I take. I'm not just not a big photo guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, and it was quite a development when I first started dating Izzy. the harsh reality of, okay, there's no scenario I'm going to get out of these pictures in any case.
Yeah, no, you upped your photos probably by 10,000%.
Easily. Like, I changed my Facebook photo probably once every 4 years previously. Now it's like every week I'm tagging something.
Yes. And for a while there, it was pretty much like what I used to joke around with, the kissing wall. So that must have been an adjustment too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the Disney office, which has the kissing wall photos. Ooh. In here. And also, as I podcast, I get to stare at my kissing abilities, if you will. So the
kissing wall has been moved to the office.
Yeah, I mean,
Is this just like kissing wall one of five? Like, is it?
I think this is about the only one. Like, I know we had different, like, it's broken up throughout the house. I mean, we're getting pretty close to saying we are completely furnished and decorated around in the place. But it's not like the apartment where we had specifically the main wall. You walk in and there was like 12 kissing photos there. What I have here is the 4 Disney kissing photos, which pretty much started the trend. And then other kissing photos are throughout, not specifically as a kissing wall, but as part of the decoration.
Now, do you ever push back, like, come on? Or do you just say, all right, I'm taking the kissing? Like, are you that good of a future husband where you just say, okay, I'm kissing? Or do you ever be like, no, like, we're not doing this, and then lose the argument?
I'm trying to, I mean, she definitely gets sighs from me. Like when we went to Disney before, it's because she always gets the photo package where you can, you basically get infinite photos for the same price. And you know, she talking about how great of a deal it is. It's like, of course, every footage of land we go to, you're taking a picture at. How can you not make a deal at this? I mean, Disney's probably gone bankrupt with this deal, the way she looks herself. But, like, I remember at the Magic Kingdom, we were there for, like, a fireworks show, and they have designated people, or specifically Disney photo tiers, if you will. I don't know if that's their official title, but that's what I'll call them. And we go up to the first one, and she'll do, like, four or five pictures of us next to the... in front of the Magic Kingdom. One of the more famous ones is me and Izzy doing the heart, if you recall.
Oh,
from the
yes.
Wall.
How could I forget?
Yeah, and then we'll go 200 feet, and there'll be a new one, and she's like, oh, let's do some more. And it's like, what the hell changed in the 200 feet? I'm like, I'm saying, okay, tell me every new photo we're about to take here.
Now,
and then there's like a kind of a stall, and then I just give up and like, all right, let's get this done.
So do you, can you, if I gave you a lineup of your Disney photos, could you pick out the ones that you were completely frustrated in?
I mean, looking at the photo, probably not, but it would, if I take a few minutes and reenact the situation, I'd probably be like, yeah, that was, I think the one that was the most frustrating one is actually in front of me now. I'm looking at the one where we both pick up our leg and kiss each other, if you recall that one, because that was after like
maybe you might have to post it when we put this out on the Instagram.
Yeah,
so people know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll hook you up. But I mean, that was
thank you.
Yeah,
you know, thank Scott, you so
you,
much, pal.
Scott, for you, I'm hooking you up, giving you the picture, all right? Because I love you, but still. But that picture, that was after about 9 miles of walking in the park, and I didn't clearly understand what she was doing. She's like, lift your leg, and then she would take a picture. She's like, oh, I don't like how it came. Do it again. And it got to the point, I'm like, all right, my leg is physically tired. I can't. This is like one of them insanity kind of... exercise where my leg is going up and you gotta hold it for like 3 minutes as she's taking various photos. So I kind of put the kibosh. I'm like, that one's good enough.
What's the beer situation like in Disney? Can you walk around and drink, or is it like, no?
They have places where you can drink. It's not like New Orleans where you can take a cup and walk around.
I feel like, yeah, that would help the picture process. Like if you were able to take the edge off a little bit, cool down with a nice cold beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously Epcot, since it's got different worlds, it got different sections. Like Germany, they had some really good beer. I remember that. And I know we're going to try to do the full world case in 2 days with Epcot. So I'll be checking out Belgium and stuff like that. I've seen videos where people have gone to every single country and got some kind of alcohol there, but...
So
I gotta figure that's gotta be a pretty penny.
Are you heading back to Disney anytime soon?
That will be the honeymoon in February.
Oh God, you really lost. You lost that battle.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, I'm not anti-Disney, but I'm one of them guys that's like, I want to keep seeing new stuff.
Right.
So it's kind of an agreement. It's like, I am fine doing this, but keep in mind, the second we leave this place, you talk about the next year, and it's going to be no.
Right.
It's maybe two years now. Now, also granted, the parents live an hour and a half away from Disney, so I wouldn't even mind doing like a quick trip in a day in one place. But like full on vacation, throwing money into it where it's like, okay, now I got to recoup these costs I just threw out there. Yeah,
it's not cheap either, man. Like I was talking to my brother. He's taking the kids to Disney in November. It's insanity how much it costs and how much it's like how many different packages there are. Like they literally have like Disney advisors like on how to plan a vacation for kids, and they have Disney lines of credit apparently. It's insane.
Yeah, they have a full vacation, like they have a vacation club where if you do numerous vacations, you get deals on it and so forth. In fact, we booked this vacation through a former co-worker's wife. She'd probably be my plug for tonight. I will give it to Disney on this. They got their self strained out. They get people in there. They get people who are excited, and they can sell stuff where they keep that place going year round and all. I mean, we're going at the best time because they say that February timeframe is probably their lightest time. So that's when the deals are kind of good on certain things like the resorts and stuff like that.
All right. Back to my budding modeling career. So I don't know. I said to him like, okay, what do you want? And he says, well, you know, like it'd be nice to have a couple doing natural photos. I'm still confused. Now, I have zero interest or experience, but I'm like, well, he's like, well, it's so simple. He's like, the two of you would come down. You each get $150 for the hour. I'm like, I'm like, it's also very tempting for the story, just to come back on here and tell the story of my modeling and also get a paycheck that says Scott Brennan model. You know? So I was talking to Alex and I was like, you know what? Like, what, you want to do this? She was like, I guess so. So, but it might not definitely happen because I don't know if the time works with her work and whatnot. But I will keep you updated on that on Friday if I do go through and model. But I thought I would before this would be a good segue, not only into our guest, but I read a little thing here that so 10 things no one tells you before you become a male model.
Oh. Yes. This is important for you.
Yes. So the first one said modeling is not your average 9-to-5 job. Everything
it's
from the
1 hour apparently.
Yeah.
it's easy being Fabio.
No, I have never. I don't know if I've ever made $150 an hour to do anything. Like, I'm trying to think. I mean, I've had some freelance jobs where I got paid all right, but $150 per hour is a pretty good rate.
That's decent.
He says, so everything from the hours you work to the time frames between jobs is far from traditional. There will be times initially when you wonder when your next job will ever arrive, and then once things get going, there will be periods when it's so busy that you'll wonder when you'll ever get your next day off. So I'm thinking if my career takes off, we might have to rearrange podcast days and times because I might be in Hong Kong, you know, doing a Ottoman shoot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could be hanging with Rain Dove and I can interview you and then be like, shoot, I dropped the recorder. Now we got to redo the entire interview.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
factor of that.
Like the podcast is coming up on 5 years old. Like, you know, it might have to end when I'm like Derek Zoolander out there just destroying it.
This sounds like a horrible ending to a TV series where it's, like, this sounds like what happened to one of the friends of Friends. You know? Oh, Phoebe, I can't believe you became a model.
Then it says you'll become a seasoned traveler. I like traveling. But he said just don't expect much sightseeing. Traveling has got to be top on the list when it comes to things you might not expect from modeling when you start out. From when I first got scouted, I have been on the move ever since. You usually fly into 1 or 2 day shoot, then get straight into the cab into the studio. Sightseeing is generally not a thing. He says a production team scouts out places to shoot off the tourist track so you get experience places, spaces, venue, and people and culture that you wouldn't normally get to see. It's definitely one of the perks of the job, but there can be a lot of waiting around, so make sure you have a hobby.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then it says learn how to pack in a hurry. Speed packing has to be learned sooner rather than later. With phone calls coming in, I'm often than not saying, today, you're off to New York for a few days, so you got to work on your packing skills. I think I'm okay with that because I generally pack the night before I leave somewhere.
Yeah, you generally, you have a whole suitcase of Verbal Shenanigans t-shirts, so you just grab that and head on out to Milan.
Well, considering how fast they've been selling, that's probably a true statement. I do have an entire suitcase of Verbal Shenanigans t-shirts if anybody wants to purchase one. Or heck, contact me and I'll freaking send you one. Just give it to me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. I have about, 25 of them at least sitting here, so... That reminds me, I got to do a couple giveaways on Instagram.
There you go.
Okay. Be prepared to cancel all your plans for a job. Birthdays, holidays, wedding, football games, or just a night on the pub have to be canceled at the drop of a hat. So like I said, Berlo, we might have lined up a guest, like a huge mega guest on Monday, but I might get the call to go to Taipei to model this bot off.
I can't believe we got Sean Kemp on the podcast, but, you know, Scott had to go do that Reebok shoot, so, you know.
Now,
just you and me, Rain Man.
Now, this is an interesting one. Don't have your hair cut without talking to your agent.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So, Berlo, I guess in this instance right now, you're my agent. So, changing your hairstyle without talking it through can be costly in the game. A few inches off the side could cost you a huge ad campaign, as you don't know who's considering you based on the images your agent has sent to them.
Yeah, I was about to say your hair looking long, but as your agent, I gotta tell you, let it go.
Just
let it be.
All right. Let's see. This one gave me some hope. Modeling is not just a young man's game.
Ooh.
It's not just a young man's game. Okay, so all those young studs you see on the Calvin Klein ads, it's not just for them.
Yeah.
Okay?
No,
modeling is a career which can last from your youth to when you're older. The demand for different looks is really diverse. So when you're still growing and not quite as filled out, you are perfect for some campaigns. Then as your body grows, you're open for different campaigns and opportunity. Also, you can be deemed too big one day and too skinny the next day without your body changing at all. See that, Berlo? I could get fat and still be too skinny for the job.
I'm just enjoying the fact that, like, when you're like 56 years old, your hair is going to be about 8 feet long, and I'll be like, don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
I told you, no cutting. Could bring it any moment.
Now this is one that I think I'm going to have to deal with. It's going to be a little hard. It never gets any easier to tell people that you're a model. There's still a lot of stigma around male modeling when you're asked, what do you do? Some people look down on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sadness of the world today. I mean, I feel that will be the next, movement, if you will. I mean, we talk about race relations. We talk about female equality. I feel the next thing we need to march to Washington about is accepting male models.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, I'm at a crossroads in my life anyway, you know, like with what I want to do. Like, I'm going to just, if I'm a male model, I'm going to blast it everywhere. I'm just going to, you know what, if I got to lose friends over it, Berlo, if you got a problem with it, I have to think about myself once.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You only become a male model for mattresses once in your lifetime.
Number eight, learn how to get dressed in the back of a car. I am a professional at this.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I drove, when I was coaching, I would change in the car, be ready for practice as I pulled up, hop right out of the car. I was a master at changing in the car while driving. So I got that one down.
I'm a master of undressing in the back of the car, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, which is why you have all those things on your record.
But I mean, I guess I shouldn't have picked the playground to change, but, you know.
All right, last one here. It says, make the most of the parties. You get to go to some of the best parties around. The fashion industry really knows how to throw a good bash, and as a normal guy from Hitchin, I'm lucky to go for a few. It's great fun. You meet some amazing people, get to experience things you never thought you'd experience, and collect some good memories. So I guess he's really telling us to schmooze it up. To really get in and mix it up with the who's who in the industry.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to you coming in next week and be like, I went in for the mattress modeling. De Niro just showed up, just out of the blue.
Wow, I didn't.
He was just there to schmooze a little bit.
I mean, maybe me and De Niro in a mattress head. You never know.
Yeah, I could see you both looking at each other very naturally. On the Sleep Ovation mattress. You can totally see that.
Yes. Well, this is a perfect segue to our next guest. Okay. So Our next guest is a model, but she's not just a model, but she has done some really cool things in the modeling world. We've had a couple models on the show. Well, at least one. but she has done things for Maxim and let me see what else.
Sports Illustrated. Sports
Illustrated, Esquire, DT Magazine, People, Vanity Fair. She's also a former figure skater, and she's also a current poet. She just put out a second book of poetry. So very interesting person. She's done a really cool campaign with Perfectly Imperfect, and we'll get into that. But with that, I'd like to call the model Elizabeth Pipko on the line and maybe get some tips for myself.
Yeah, yeah, you got to prep for this,
man. Yeah. Well, you know, like, I figure if you're going to talk to the best, you got to do this. You know, like, maybe she can get me on her next shoot.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I can totally see it.
So with that, let's give Ms. Pipko, Elizabeth Pipko, a call. All right, Mike, you there? You can hear Elizabeth?
Yes, I can.
Elizabeth, first off, thank you so much for giving me and Mike a few minutes here, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Elizabeth, I noticed, that sounds weird, but I know that you are a model, and you've done things in Vanity Fair, People, Maxim, Esquire, and whatnot. Was this always the goal for you, modeling? I know you were also a figure skater and whatnot. And also, how did you first get into this?
Okay, long question. So I was discovered super randomly. We adopted a dog in Florida, or we found the dog in the street, actually, and adopted him. And we were walking him in the park in Central Park here in New York. And a photographer asked to borrow the dog for a photo shoot and then to repay my mom for letting her use Tiny Tim. She offered to do a headshot or a photo shoot or whatever it was that we needed. So my mom said, hey, I have a teenage daughter. I'm sure she'd appreciate it. I'm sure it would be fun. So I did a small photo shoot, and the pictures were sent to a big agency, Wilhelmina, here in New York, and I got signed. So that's how that all started. And no, I obviously did not see any of it coming or ever want to model more than I think the average girl wants to model. But like I said, obviously everyone deep down wants to try it or be a model or say they're a model or whatever it is. So there was like a small part of me that was super curious and obviously now excited that I got to, you know, try it and have these opportunities.
I mean, that's a crazy story and all. I mean, was it awkward, like, going into the, when you became a model and then you go to your mom's house and the dog is there and it's staring at you, like, being competitive with you on who had a better modeling career?
No, I was super thankful, obviously, to Timmy. And,
you pet the dog a little more that night and said, thank you. Thank you for the start of this. I will say, I want to ask you. I got this random. We had a sponsor on the show, a mattress company, for a couple months, and he randomly texted me the other day. Would you and your fiance be interested in modeling our mattress company? Now, I am photo shy. I could talk all day behind this microphone or on stage, but I don't really like taking photos that much. But we're thinking the money's not that bad for the two of us. It's only an hour. I need a couple tips from you. Help me out.
I guess smile is important when selling mattresses.
Oh, man.
You're not going to buy the mattress if you're not happy. And then I guess have fun. A lot of people don't get the chance to, you know, do a photo shoot even for something like that. But have fun and enjoy it because obviously you're going to look back and think it was hilarious. So why not enjoy the moment?
All right. Well, I'll send you the pictures and you could could critique them and tear them down. Tear them down.
So, I mean, how comfortable were you as you were kind of joking with Scott and all? Was it something that you said off the bat, yeah, I can keep doing this? Or was it just kind of, oh, this is fun, kind of a one-off deal?
I feel like in certain moments, I'm like, oh, this is super fun. Everyone should want to do this. Best thing ever. I'm so lucky. Oh, my God. And then other moments, I'm like, I would rather die than be here. And I still have those moments all the time.
So when you were first introduced to that world, now we've had a model or two on the show, and they have told us similar stories about the length of shoots or the expectations of different agents and people who shoot and whatnot. Did you have experiences right away where you were like, I'm going to give this up, or did you have an easy, gradual introduction to the business?
No, I'd say I actually fought a lot with my parents, who told me that I should, you know, not quit and stick to things and blah, 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 because I think right off the bat, I was like, this is not for me, and this is not what I want to do, blah, blah, blah. And my parents are, like, crazy open-minded and also knew how upset I was by not skating and, like, not having something to do, so they supported it and didn't really understand actually how uncomfortable I was. But no, it definitely was not an easy, gradual, you know, introduction at all.
Now, you're a Harvard student or graduate, if you will. How were you balancing going to school, and were you still doing this, or were you working on other stuff? I know you have a book of poetry we'll be getting into in a bit. Where were you focusing on, if you will, during that time?
So I'm actually still a student, not a graduate.
Oh, okay.
And I want to say my focus was, like, a little bit everywhere. My plan when I got injured was to move back to New York, finish high school, and then go to Harvard. But then I started skating again and discovered modeling and the books and all these things and realized that I actually wanted to make school kind of like something I did on the side, kind of like I had done my high school stuff. So Harvard has, it's called the Harvard University Extension School. It's kind of, you know, an opportunity for people to get their degrees who can't be there full time or, you know, do the perfect number of credits every semester. So I take less credits than the average student because I do all these other things. And then I can go there for midterms and finals and all that, but I can actually do most of my coursework from home and just watch the lectures online.
Now, pre-modeling, you were a figure skater. Now, when did you start that way? Like, you always hear most of those athletes start very, very young. And, you know, it kind of seems to consume them life. They're at the rink 5 days a week. When did you get your start in that?
I actually started pretty late. I was almost 11, actually. And I fell in love right away. And it, you know, totally let it consume my life. We moved to Florida from New York within, like, 6 months of me starting because I had coaches in Florida that wanted to train me that were really good. My dad he had his job in New York, so he would fly back and forth every week. My mom gave up her whole life and moved there. My little brother had to move there. We were homeschooled right off the bat. I spent, I think, 6, maybe even 7 sometimes days at the rink.
Wow.
A week, probably like 6 or 7 hours a day at the rink. I had no friends. I changed my diet, everything, all about skating.
So what level were you at? Give us something like, were you in national competitions? Were you close to Olympic level? Give us an idea into the inside of the world of figure skating.
So like I said, I started late and I did skate, I want to say more than the average skater, only because I had to patch up. Mm-hmm. Like, there were some injuries that I skated through because I didn't want to fall behind. Or there were some times where I would skate an extra day a week instead of, you know, 5 or 6, and I let myself rest because I was a little crazy trying to catch up. But I began skating super late, and then within, I want to say, like, 2 years, probably caught up to a lot of people, you know, like the average skater my age. I started, I worked all the way up to triple jumps, which is, like, basically the highest level of jumps that female skaters do. I did regional competitions, 2 international competitions. I mean, I don't want to say anywhere near Olympic level.
Right.
But I got myself very quickly on the path that, like, I could have gone in that direction.
When you train as fiercely as this and with goals of making this to the next level, what kind of enjoyment level do you have at skating? Are you able to be friends with people that you skate with or compete with, or is it just the grind of I gotta get better?
I mean, I want to say there's some kind of, like, camaraderie, because, you know, a lot of people have, like, the same coaches who skate at the same rank, so even if you have competitors, you still have some friends because you're like, oh, we skate at the same place, or, oh, we go through these things together. Like, there are some people that you become super close with, but apart from, like, those few that you can bond with, it's really just competitive moms and kids all over, and, you know, you watching your back every day, even if you're 10 years old.
So now, what injury put you out of skating?
So actually, it was very unlucky with injuries. I broke, I want to say, probably 11 bones even before I had that final injury. In like the first 4 years of skating, I broke my femur in half. I had a few really bad concussions. I had a skate for the head, a fracture to my kneecap. I broke a bone in my ankle. I broke, I think, all my toes at one point, like everything possible.
Mm-hmm.
But the final injury was a torn ankle. I tore 3 ligaments, 2 tendons, bruised every bone, I think broke a few things, and it was really bad.
Now, what's the mindset after that as a kid who's spending 6 days a week at the rink and, you know, making that their dream? Were you just completely devastated? Were you forced to find something new immediately? Did you try to get back up and skate again, or did you know that was kind of it?
I mean, I was beyond devastated. I'm not probably cried myself to sleep for like 3 years straight.
Jesus.
I mean, I always thought that I was going to come back and skate, even though every doctor on the planet said you should never skate again. But I mean, I think the hardest part, once you get used to being in a cast and having your friends sign it and all of that, the hardest part was actually probably getting the cast off 3-4 months later and realizing that I had no ability to use my right foot at all. You know, going from doing like death-defying tricks on ice in your favorite place in the world to being in physical therapy, learning to walk stairs again at 16, it was awful.
So as you were going to school now, I mean, what are you going into school for, and is it are you using Harvard as a step in helping you out in your modeling career, or are you looking at other careers?
So right now my plan is majoring in legal studies and double minoring in math and religion, which is a weird combination and super random, honestly. And I actually don't know what I want to use it for. I always said to my dad, I promised my dad, no matter how good I got in skating or whatever else I attempted, that I would get my degree and I would graduate from a good school and all that. So I'm finishing no matter what. And I'm, you know, I'm excited to be doing law and, like, you know, working hard like I am, but I honestly have no idea what I want to use it for just yet. But I know that I obviously plan on graduating and, you know, seeing what comes with that combined with everything else I'm doing.
Now, you've had, I mean, what I would consider major success in modeling, things from Maxim to Esquire to Vanity Fair and people. One thing I did want to get into, you were part of something called the Perfectly Imperfect campaign, which was had to do with Annie Photoshop. Was that something you were approached with, or is that something that you wanted to sign on to? Because it is something that obviously we hear all the time about how things are in the modeling world are photoshopped like insanely, and how pictures are just altered left and right. You can watch videos on it. And also want to know, prior to that, did you notice your photos being overly photoshopped, and did it bother you, and how did that come about?
I'm trying to make a short story. Basically, I was approached just to do the Vizcaya Swimwear campaign, which is a swimwear company. And then on set, I actually met the owner of the company, Lisa, who's super nice, and we started talking. And we bonded over, you know, like modeling and industry and being bullied and just, you know, things that come with being a girl who has followers or whatever it is and being attacked constantly. And we talked about kind of like, I mean, she had, I think, something apart from her swimwear, which is, like a platform for, you know, female empowerment and young girls and things like that. We started talking about how she wants to inspire them more than she even wants to sell swimwear. And she said that she hates, you know, where the industry is going. And we were talking about modeling and how it's become what it is, and everything is over photoshopped and overdone. So we thought actually together that it would be a really cool idea to do all the images and kind of focus on the swimwear, because that's all we're selling, and not on trying to sell like a perfect female body, because obviously no one has one. And it's just not healthy for people to have to like look at that when they're just trying to buy clothing. So that was kind of the idea.
And what was the result of that? Did you guys get a lot of positive feedback? And
super positive. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's an interesting, I don't know. Now let me ask you, recently with the Miss America pageant, they took out like the swimsuit competition. They kind of try to move away. I don't call it sexuality, but I guess objectification of a woman. I'm wondering your thoughts on looking at that and being in a modeling career where, even though you're a very smart lady, you're educated, you put out books. Sometimes the second you hear model, some people immediately think, brainless, just out there for a body making money.
I mean, I don't know. I think the Miss America pageant and the modeling are a bit different. But, I mean, I did do one pageant, actually, when I was younger, so I can kind of relate. But, I mean, I think the most important thing I learned when I signed up for those things, or even when I started modeling, is that I thought it would be super easy. I was like, oh, it's walking around in a bikini. Like, I'm trying to go to Harvard, do all these things. It's not a big deal. But it actually takes a lot of confidence and a lot of guts to go out there, especially with, like, you know, with 18-year-old, 17, you know, all women actually like, are feeling about their bodies or about the world. So I think it's an important lesson. I don't want to say that maybe it's not introduced to people the right way. Maybe people watch it and think about all the hot girls out there and not about, you know, how women are excited to be on stage in a bikini and proud of who they are. Maybe it should be presented in a different way, but I obviously think a lot more comes with both the pageant and modeling and everything else that people don't realize.
Now, you mentioned it briefly in one of your statements before. I was curious. So like on Instagram where you have lots and lots and lots of followers and your image is out there, your body, do you run into, and I think you said it, do you run into a lot of people being like over the line or aggressive or insulting to you like for no reason? Because there are, the internet is just loaded with trolls, you know, loaded with people who just love to comment and start fight. Do you run into a lot of that being a model where you are, you know, that is a hard job putting your body out there all the time. Do you run into people who are just completely inappropriate and I guess haters, if you will?
Yeah, probably every day there's someone who says something either ridiculously inappropriate or very forward or, you know, obviously super insulting or rude or whatever it is. Some days more than others, but probably every day, if not a few times a day, that definitely happens.
So does that, is it hard to just, I mean, I'm guessing you learn to just block that out, but is it even just as a human, it's got to be hard to like read that stuff and just completely ignore it?
Yeah, I mean, it's super hard. I think you don't actually realize how difficult it is because you're like, oh, it's a stranger, I don't care. But I mean, I'm actually, I think, super sensitive, but I get really emotional about it. Some affect me less than others. If someone says you're ugly, but okay, that's, you know, it's your opinion, congratulations. Like, I don't think that's as bad. A lot of people that say you're stupid, you're this, you're that, like, those are mean. Sometimes they come people I actually knew growing up. Those hurt a lot more than strangers. But yeah, I mean, it's always out of, like, super out of nowhere, super random, and always pretty insulting. If I'm not in, like, a really good place that day, it's very easy, you know, to read that and kind of go into a really depressed state.
So how do you deal with that? Do you just develop a hard mindset, like, to try to ignore it, or do you go back and forth, or do you personally go through that?
I mean, I try to avoid seeing it. I'll avoid reading a lot of, like, messages on it, because, you know, people can send messages, things like that. I try to avoid reading them. Sometimes they're positive and I'll miss it just because I'm scared to click on it. Sometimes I avoid that. If there's an article, I never read the comments, things like that. But if it ever does, you know, come up, I have a really supportive family. My fiance, my brother, my parents are super, you know, we're super close and they're always around. So that helps, obviously. But sometimes there's no way around it and you're just upset. And it takes, you know, a few minutes of crying and then a few hours of distraction to realize that, you know, people are saying things because they're jealous and doesn't matter. And sometimes it honestly takes a few hours, if not a day or so, of me sulking because someone out there wants me to cry or whatever it is and not understanding why.
Ugh. It's got to be a horrible balance in all terms of being proud of your work to basically some nobody be like, blah, 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 I don't like you. And
yeah,
that's terrible. But let's talk about something more positive. And now you're also an author who brought up, you have a book of poetry out, you putting out a second book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you got your voice in poetry, and do you have like a hero that you based off of, or are you more of a freestyle poet?
Yeah, so I started writing when I got injured, actually, because I was super sad and didn't really have a way to vent and get that out. So the first book was, you know, just me being sad, honestly, not realizing I wanted to write poetry, and it kind of all just happened. The second one I put a lot more effort into. I kind of, you know, read more poetry in the 5 years or so that went between the books. I read some poetry, I took a few classes, I studied, and kind of like decided what I wanted to do, because, you know, the first one came from nowhere. So I focused more on that before I put out the second one. But I think, honestly, people like Shel Silverstein are people that I look up to with that. I never really liked really intricate, you know, hard to understand poems that, you know, you have to like sit there and like analyze. Like, I like 8 lines that tell you a story and either put you in a bad mood or a good mood or whatever it is. So I think even things like that, although they're a lot better, obviously, and a lot more inspiring than my writing, but I think Shel Silverstein type writing is actually the inspiration.
Okay, so you're coming out with your second book. If like readers or listeners want to like, if you were to give them a summary of what you're writing, is it silly? Is it deeply personal? Is it a little bit of both? What could you sum up your poetry a little bit?
Yeah, so the second book, it's called About You. It's actually it came out about a month and a half ago, so it's still new, but it is out, and it's basically a love story. It's 24 poems. I kind of tell like, you know, a story, ups and downs, a lot more downs, but it's all about skating. But I didn't mention a sport or skating or any details in it because I wanted it to read like a love story so that no one really realized that it was a sport that I was talking about. So they wanted to read it and, you know, think about their mom or an ex-boyfriend or a husband or a wife or a child or a sport or whatever it is that they are missing, they could, you know, relate with it. Because anything that was, you know, anything that's love is relatable. And I think I love my sport more than I love a lot of people in my life. So I think if people were to read it, they would totally, you know, relate it to whoever it is that they love and not really care who it is I'm talking about, just kind of care that we have the same feelings and they have someone that they can relate to.
Now, is the what is the poetry market like? Like, you know, I know a lot of comics, I know a lot of musicians, but I don't know a lot of poets. Is it really, really hard to break into that and garner attention in that market? Or do you really not care? You're just kind of putting it out because and see where it lands?
I mean, a part of me doesn't care because, like I said, it's insanely personal stuff that just meant a lot, you know, to come out there. And also, it's, you know, if I can have one person read it and inspire them, like, that means a lot to me. So that's enough for me. But at the same time, I'm a crazy perfectionist and I want anything I do to be remotely successful. So I did think about it. And I do think it's super difficult. If you ask anyone nowadays growing up who their favorite like current poet was, I don't think anyone could name you somebody because people don't really read
Cardi B.
Exactly. like people would probably say Dr. Seuss. I don't know what they would say. So I think it's super hard to break into. But I mean, like I said, the goal is to have something relatable and have something short and easy that you could just read and like, you know, connect with really quickly and really personally. Versus, you know, having a book that, like, sold millions of copies.
Now, are you, with it being so emotional, do you have to be in a certain mood to begin this poetry? Or can you just, you know, write something, begin working on something just out of blue? Like, I'm a little bored. Let me try to push out some feelings, if you will.
And I think when I was bored, I did my best editing, you know, going in and being like, that doesn't read super well, or putting in a comma or whatever it was, or coming up with titles, things like that. But I actually had to be in like a really depressed state to actually write the poem. And then when I was coming up with, you know, different rhymes or like reading something and just wanting, you know, seeing how it sounded or reading it for my brother or whoever it was, then it could be done at any time. But unless they have like a sad, like meaningful song on, or I dealt with something that day or something crossed my mind, I don't think I could have written any of those poems.
So, I mean, I guess as we kind of come towards the end of this, what is your now? You obviously have the poetry. You have a very successful modeling career. You're also still a student at Harvard. What are your goals, and where do you see yourself falling? Do you see yourself still doing all these things at once, or is something falling by the wayside? And are you pursuing something more?
I mean, everything that I've chosen is kind of very random and very driven by luck, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Everything that I knew from skating was like, you know, the person that works the hardest, I guess, who doesn't get injured, is going to win. Whereas in modeling, it's kind of, you know, you get discovered, meet the right person, or the right person discovers your book, I guess, or whatever it is. So I'm really not sure. I know that, you know, I do these things and I want to be good at them and I enjoy it, so I'd like to continue doing it, but I don't actually know. where it's going to lead. I have everything kind of equal in my head. I have the school and this and that, and I just want to graduate and want to keep writing and want to keep modeling and seeing where it goes. But I actually also came back to skating about a year and a half ago and started training again. So I'm struggling big time. I have my ankle in an ice bucket right now, actually. But I'm
it's funny that I just followed you on Instagram on their Verbal Shenanigans, and the first thing that popped up was your foot in the bucket.
Yeah.
This is some weird modeling I'm looking at. My God. What are you selling here?
So, yeah, I think, like, it's very important. I mean, I know you said you're not sure. I think it's very important, even what you were talking about to us, like the unnecessary hate and the troll and expressing how that does affect. So I think that's an important message that people need to hear, because they see, you know, they see this attractive model who looks confident and takes all these amazing pictures and is a skater and a poet, like. But to hear that the human element of that, I think, is very important. I would love to see you bring that to an audience.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you know, one of the reasons I put the book out, and I did, you know, the Perfectly Imperfect campaign. Like, there's so much that we deal with, like every model, every person, student, girl, like whoever you are. There's so much out there that we deal with besides like our day to day jobs or whatever it is. I just thought it was important to remind people that, you know, everyone deals with the same things, and, you know, everyone thinks the same way and feels the same way, and it's not always, you know, the way it looks on Instagram or the way you think about models or whatever it is.
Well, Elizabeth, you seem very sweet. You're very inspirational. But as we do these interviews, we always like to try to find a different side of somebody. So I got to ask you, what is the harshest thing you called somebody from Yale? Like, just be brutally honest and all. If it made them cry, so be it.
Oh, my God. I don't think I can say that. My dad actually went there, so I can't really say anything.
Oh.
I honestly have never met anyone from one of those schools in my life. Any of those top schools. So I can't really say anything mean about, you know, that specific school. But anyone that focuses that much on their school, I seem to not get along with them. I don't know why. So that's all I'm
going to say. All right, fine. Then I'm going to ask you an even more controversial question that we ask a lot of guests, okay? Now, you're a model, you're a skater. I imagine your diet is pretty, you know, pretty watched and whatnot. But we have to ask, pineapple on pizza, okay? I am a giant fan of it. Mike is not. What are your thoughts on pineapple on pizza?
Oh, Lord. Okay. Actually very serious in my family, because yeah, my brother's favorite thing in the world, and I grew up making fun of him for it. But I actually don't like pizza.
Oh, my God.
I don't like super weird.
This interview's over.
It's a push. But I will eat it strictly with pineapples, jalapenos, and onions on it.
Yes.
Like, wow.
Yeah. See that, Berlu? Now, I'm going to be a male
model.
I'm
trying to get that combination in my head, and all. My brain might explode right now.
No, because me and my friends, we used to order pineapple, jalapeno, and onion, so I'm right with you, right there.
There you go. Yeah.
We can't be winners, so that's fine. I'll let it go, Elizabeth.
All right, Berlu, this debate rolls on, man. Every week we get a different answer. So, Elizabeth, you've been absolutely awesome. If people want to check you out or follow you or check out your book, where should they go?
You can follow me on Instagram under my name, Elizabeth Pipko, and my books are both at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon. The first one is called 316, and the second one is called About You.
That's awesome. Elizabeth, thank you so much, and good luck with everything you got going on.
Thank you so much. Have a great night, guys.
All right. Elizabeth Pipko. Berlu, I'm feeling like she inspired me. Just a couple more shoots, and I think I'm going to be the face of mattresses.
I mean, I see how her career progressed and all, so I'm thinking I come back to Jersey and crush your foot.
Why would you do that? You're gonna.
Well, you heard what happened to her.
You're gonna Tonya Harding me.
Yeah, I mean, why not? And all. I mean, we can. If you're worried and all, we can make it a bit for Verbal Shenanigans and all, just like one of those hidden camera shows where, you know, you're just walking around the park and I just smash in your kneecap and And as you're screaming in pain, I'm like, you just got shenaniganed.
Why would you ruin my modeling career?
Well, they're not going to shoot your leg. I mean, now you have more reason to smile that you're laying down on the soft mattress.
I don't think that's really fair. Like, you're gonna take my budding new career that might be my way out of my current career, and you're just gonna destroy it for your own self motive.
Well, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised you have a career to start with. When did that start?
Oh, I meant my job.
Oh, gotcha.
If you thought I meant podcasting and comedy, you are wrong, sir.
I got three wings of Tap House 15. Career sold.
If you thought I meant that the thing that I do for occasional money and long nights that are far away, you are wrong.
Something says I love my job and being in an upstate New York open mic.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see. I want to do the photo shoot. I hope it works out for Alex's schedule so we can just do it and then make fun of it and then talk about it just as a story. So
yeah,
but
yeah, I mean, and you gotta figure you gotta take a sick day for that. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. Or even just get out a half day, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
Berlew, it's been a while. It's been a while, but I want to jump right into it. It's time for Bear News.
Oh.
That's correct. And insert theme song here.
Bear News. We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking Bear News. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears and shit.
I'll probably forget, and then it will just be left as insert theme song here. All right, Berlew. First bear news. For those of you who don't know, I don't really know exactly how the bit started. It might have just started since I like bears, and I don't know. We did a whole big bear episode once, and then it just started into a segment called Bear News. But every once in a while, we just do a couple different things. We just read some modern bear stories. It doesn't really make much sense, and I'm not asking you to really understand it. But here we go. Bear burned in car fire treated with fish skins. Okay.
That makes total sense, but yeah. Continue.
Okay, so in Shasta County, that's a cool name for a county, a black bear that's paws were burned in a deadly car fire is recovering thanks to an experimental kind of treatment involving fish skin. A Pacific Gas and Electric contractor discovered the bear on August 2nd lying in ash near Whiskey Town. This sounds like something straight out.
I love the county. I love the town. We got bears with fish skins on it. I don't know why we're not moving there right now.
I just love that bear was burned up down there in some Whiskey Town. You know,
you know how Whiskey Town goes there, Scotty. The if fire ain't a burned up bear, it ain't Tuesday.
The fire was a raging. It was in Whiskey Town. You know how those Whiskey Townians are. There's bears every day.
Nuts, man. When the Great Bear Fire 47 comes to mind right off the bat.
We powered our houses with burnt bear. We had nothing left.
Yeah, then they told us about oil, which sounded much, much better and safer. But still, the bear burning, man, those houses were nice.
So unable to walk, they found her. The bear unable to walk on her burned paws, okay, according to California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So Fish and Wildlife personnel from Redding responded, and the bear was taken to the Wildlife Investigations Lab in Rancho Cordova for treatment. On Monday, Dr. Jamie Payne and the UC Davis Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital began the process of suturing sterilized tilapia skins on the bear's injured tissues, Fish and Wildlife said. The bear also received antibiotics, pain medication, laser treatment, and acupuncture for pain management. The animal is the third burn bear to receive the type of fish skin treatment, said Fish and Wildlife, which noted that because the fish skins are sterilized, the bears don't recognize them as food. Two female blackbirds burned in Thomas Fire that ripped through Santa Barbara and Ventura counties in December 2007 were also treated with fish skins. New skin grew back on the bear's paw pads within weeks.
I mean, for starters, since it's like the third bear that's ever had this, it almost feels like we just rejected the first two bears. You know, it's kind of like, oh, we don't care about those bears. This is a special bear.
No, but it says the first two bears, that they started growing skin again. There's a lot. We got to dig into this a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My first thought, do we give this much care to a burnt human? I've never heard of someone getting burnt and then them rubbing tilapia skin all over them.
Yeah, we should make sure that every time the fire department goes out, they have plenty of fish fry with them. You know, just in case.
Stop, drop, and roll. I'll throw fish on it. I got...
You just see some fireman beating up some burn victim with a mackerel and a... It's all for your own good, sir. Hold still.
Let me slap this flounder on your calf. It'll feel so much better.
It sounds like a Gallagher bit of some sort. So no...
So this is relatively amazing to me. This is like, listen, you hear of like bears and animals who come into neighborhoods and eat garbage and they get put down for no reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that there is people out there taking care of these bears that burn their paws in a fire and they're putting tilapia skin on them and giving them acupuncture, Berlo, my neck's been hurting for months. I don't get free acupuncture.
No. You haven't gone into the California wildfires. That's your problem.
Ah, so in order
you
to get
the free stuff there, you come walking out like Freddy Krueger. Ah, my neck's going to feel good any minute. Now.
Just run around and be like, my back hurts. Throw tilapia on it.
My back hurts. I got to run in a fire. Scott, that's not how it works. Be quiet. I'm almost there.
No.
Ah, a bear.
Now this is amazing to me. This to me is like a good story, like a good heartwarming. Like the fact that there are people out there that are like helping these bears, and then there's idiots who like want to shoot all the bears because they're in their garbage. Now I get like if they're in Wyoming and it's population control to keep the population of bears going forever, that's one thing. But you know, the killing of bears because they're in your garbage, I mean that's kind of like our fault.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get why they can't just tranquilize it and bring it back into the woods. And all. I mean, usually they put tags on them so they can track them and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's a pretty amazing story. I mean, I wonder how they came up with fish skins and, more importantly, specifically tilapia. I mean, I wonder if they went through a whole gamut of fish before they figured out. Big mouth bass? Nope. Salmon? No.
We lost three scientists this week because one tried to put goldfish on that bear's foot. It hurt bad.
Stupid bear, stop eating the fish. Let me put it on your feet.
Turns out the bear did not like the fish on his paw and mauled him.
Yeah. They should have really put it to sleep before they did the whole fish skin thing. I mean, they really should have thought it through.
Yeah. So these
scientists aren't smart.
I found that a pretty amazing story. All right.
It is an old series, man.
Let's go to second story.
Let's do it.
71-year-old woman in a wheelchair survives bear attack in her kitchen.
There's so many questions, so I'll allow you to continue the story.
Let's get to the story, and then we'll dig in. A black bear attacked a 71-year-old New Hampshire woman in her house early Tuesday morning, but she survived and was able to call for help, New England Cable News reports. April Rogers, who lived in Groton, Connecticut. Groton, New Hampshire. I think that was Connecticut.
Oh, Groton?
Yeah. Was asleep in her home when she heard the strange sounds coming from her kitchen around 1:15 a.m. Her daughter, Stacy Murray, told the outlet. Rogers encountered the bear, who was rummaging through her kitchen, and it attacked her and injured her face as it was trying to get out of the house. It likely was able to enter the home by pushing open the side door, which wasn't properly latched. Murray, who showed up at her mother's house after the incident, was shocked when she saw the scene. There's trash everywhere. There's bear feces everywhere. There's blood everywhere. She also noticed claw marks on the door, household items strewn across the floor, and a blood trail in some places. She was yelling at the bear to get out, Murray said. It was really very scary. Somehow, though, Rogers, who uses a wheelchair, was able to call 911 herself by dragging herself to the phone. It's a miracle in itself. Rogers since has been hospitalized for serious injuries to her neck and head, including several fractures. She also had a six-hour surgery, and there's possibility she's going to lose an eye.
Oof. Oh, yes. Well, here's my first thing that pops into my head with that story. So there's three things in your house. There's blood, there's bear feces, and there's garbage. Garbage shouldn't be the first thing that you bring up in that sentence. It seems like the least of your problems.
I feel like right I've there. Seen that episode of Hoarders, though. There's bear feces everywhere.
God damn, it's a bear, Jane.
There's bear feces everywhere. And spatulas. And blood.
Can we get rid of the blood? I may need that blood. You keep saying it. You never use the blood.
And the bear blood. And the bear feces. You said you were going to use that for arts and crafts. You haven't touched it.
Yeah. I used it as compost last week. That was 3 months ago, and you know it.
But God, a woman in a wheelchair getting attacked by a bear and making it out.
Yeah, if you could survive in a wheelchair, if your chubby ass is in the woods, you better survive, and because you will not hear the end of it in the afterlife. Oh, couldn't run away? Oh, yeah? Look at that woman down there in New Hampshire. Good job, fat boy.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that the bear just came right into the house is pretty ridiculous, too. Like, just blasted through the door.
Mm-hmm. So I guess he went up the ramp or something like that. I don't know. Those are New Hampshire bears, I guess.
Yeah. All right, last one here. This is pretty much related to a bear, but China won't release Disney's Christopher Robin movie, the movie that's coming out.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the dead wrestler, China.
Oh, no.
That'd been an interesting story.
So they won't release Disney's Christopher Robin movie because Winnie the Pooh memes have become too subversive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So China's film authorities are denying the release of Christopher Robin at a time when Winnie the Pooh has emerged as a symbol of resistance in the country towards its leader, Xi Jinping. The film starring Ewan McGregor and a CGI Winnie the Pooh aspires to tell the tale of recapturing childhood innocence. In China, the Pooh imagery is anything but innocent in meaning. Since last summer, Chinese authorities began blocking images of Winnie the Pooh on social media because of purported resemblance between the bear and the Chinese president. According to The Hollywood Reporter, when first reported on China's refusal to distribute the film, a source blamed the Pooh crackdown in China for the move. Some Disney releases, such as Maleficent and Cinderella, have done well for the company in China in recent years. So, in June, HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver noted that the Yi Pooh connection and created a mock propaganda video that tweaked Yi's apparent sensitivity to the comparison. HBO's online content was soon blocked in China.
I've heard about this story before. John Oliver was talking about on Last Week Tonight. I remember hearing about that. You figured Disney would just, like, plop in one of their other properties in that movie to sell it in China to get some money, you know? They're like, wow, this Mulan sequel is weird.
just plop in the blue furry guy from Monsters, Inc.
Why not? John Goodman's hot. He'll take the role. He don't care.
Now, the Winnie the Pooh thing is a pretty decent stretch. I mean, it's just kind of like a frumpy Chinese guy, and they're just putting Winnie the Pooh, it's like pretty harmless comparison.
Well, I just like he's the dictator leader of a, what's that, 3 billion person country, and he's still too sensitive about a meme.
Yeah, I mean, these Asian countries their leaders gotta be less sensitive.
Yeah, really, man. I mean,
meanwhile, we're Americans and we're talking about our non-sensitive leader.
That's a callback, Scott.
That's the most sensitive man I think that's ever been in the public eye. But
I'm gonna miss Omarosa. I am.
Oh, are you? Are you? You know, at a tear.
You know, in all seriousness, with all this audio coming out, we should really try to see if we can get Trump on the podcast. I got a feeling it oddly won't be that hard. I just
like
got a
now
feeling
or like after the presidency.
I'd say now. Why not? I mean, find out who's the 12th senator of New Jersey. We'll just say we're that and get him on. That's how John Melendez got him.
All right, so get on and get Trump on for next week. We don't have a guest scheduled yet anyway.
So. Well, that is true. I mean, Scott, I couldn't get the guy who did the backwards hurdles record, but I got Donald Trump.
Damn, man, I really wanted to talk to that hurdle guy.
Yeah, how does he know when to jump? It's weird.
But anyway, guys, that is another edition of Bear News.
Insert ending song.
I know, like a couple episodes ago, I definitely did not put the Bear News intro in or Dirtbag of the Week, and I think we definitely did like put song in or something like that. Like, I know for a fact. I think it was Dirtbag.
It's a philosophical kind of theme song to our stuff.
We like you to make your own, to insert your own.
Yeah. We'd like you to send it in on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, your Bear News theme song.
Oh, that'd be great. If we were like popular enough.
And if you
enough,
give it to us, we'll give you a free t-shirt as a callback to what we were talking about earlier today.
Unbelievable.
This episode.
Unbelievable work, Berlew. Unbelievable.
That's what I do. That's what I come to do.
Now,
entertainment, not so much.
All we need to do is just find listeners, and then...
Well, have you hashtagged cocaine lately?
No, I haven't hashtagged it, but I have certainly done... No, I haven't.
Well, that's what the kids are doing now. They're hashtagging it there, Scott. You gotta give it the times.
Well, I mean, for a while there, your Twitter bombs were the thing that really, like... made us start getting random follows and listens. Remember?
Yeah.
There was a point where, like, you would tweet something and we would randomly get, like, 40 listens.
Yeah, that was before the days of Twitter saying, hey, I can make money on this and basically block everything humanly possible. I mean, pretty much all of this stuff, I mean, even with sharing the Facebook and all that, I still try to put in an hour or two doing that stuff, but it drives you nuts because of all the analytics behind these sites where they're just blocking out everything. It's just ridiculous.
I also think back in those Twitter days, like we've had this conversation, but the listen numbers made no sense. Like we were getting insane amounts of listens. Like I think it had something to do with any time that hashtag was clicked or something, it was giving us a listen or something. Because we were getting numbers that were ridiculous for a couple episodes. Ridiculous.
Yeah, like few thousands worth. Yeah.
I mean, not to say we're doing pretty good now. We are hitting the goal I set for this year, and I think we should clear that pretty well. But I also think that might happen on some, you know, some clicking and whatnot. You never really know. So if you do actually listen, contact us.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you heard it now. I mean, we're about an hour and a half into this podcast. If you stayed long enough for this, I mean, give us a shout out for God's sakes.
Yeah. So what do you got, Berlew? Anything this week or no?
Well, I mean, this week I'm just finishing up cleaning out the place, getting it ready for everybody coming over in a couple weeks, big marriage and everything. But I'm beating up my body pretty big time and all lately. I got I ended up getting a splinter in my buttocks late last night.
Listen, this is kind of like a PG-13 show. I really don't want to know what goes down in that Disney office.
She gives me the Little Mermaid treatment, you know what I mean?
You think they'll ever? You think they'll ever have a rating system on podcasts? Like some governing body will come in and just be like, you know, we got to rate your podcast in case blah 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 listens to that.
Well, considering there's probably about 80 billion different episodes of every single podcast. I highly doubt somebody's going to go through and go through the whole rating
system. What if they came in and were like, there was something like, for now on, we're going to rate, give your podcast a rating, like a general thing, because they'd come up with some excuse, like, kids are listening to this, you know, and, you know, they might not be, their parents might not know they're listening to this, so we really got to put a rating on it. And there's no way that's far-fetched, because you could totally see that happening in America.
It's not far-fetched. It'd be pretty close to impossible, but, if you're asking what we would have, I would say PG-13.
I think so, too. That's where I think we'd float.
I mean, we talk about adult stuff, but we don't go slamming into those topics, if you will. I mean, we curse from time to time, but nothing out of the blue.
We're never doing anything overtly sexual or doing, like, telling gross bits. And even when we do, we try to finesse it a little bit, like, where we're not... Mm-hmm. We don't overtly say it. We just kind of like beat around the bush, like Seinfeld-esque, if you will.
Yeah. Every time I listen to our episodes, I'm like, this is exactly like Seinfeld.
Yeah.
We are right on that level.
All right, Splinterbug, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was cleaning out the garage, and we were putting stuff in the attic. So I'm up in the attic pushing some stuff, and then I get a kind of a poke as I'm like... just kind of moving down the plank, if you want. And I thought, okay, that something poked me or whatever, but I couldn't find anything there, so I thought nothing of it. And I'm going along with my day, and about probably like 40 minutes later, I'm like, man, that thing that whatever poked me still hurts and all. So I go to feel there, and there's something back there. And I had like, I would probably say about... probably about a quarter of an inch splinter in my right cheek, if you will.
Oh, yeah? Now, what's the process here? Are we, like, trying to get it out without looking at it? Like, are you like, oh, I'm trying to pick it out? Or do you have
to, like... Well, it's kind of hard to look at it considering it's back there. But,
yeah, so, like, do you got to go in the bathroom next and, like, bend over and get into a mirror to see it? Or were you like, Izzy, you know, through thick or thin, take this out?
Yeah. No, I'm not like a comedian we used to know about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. No, I actually was lucky enough where it wasn't embedded into me. You know, it was just one of those I could quickly pull it out. And I'm like, huh, son of a gun kind of deals. But it was one of those really awkward. I'm like, huh, that's one in a million shots there.
One in a million. Just like Seinfeld.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, also, my feet are getting chewed up by bugs and all. I don't know what it is about the mosquitoes down here, but they like to attack your feet. So I have, like, mosquito bites in between my toes, which is, like, the most awkward feeling on the planet.
I picture those clips of, like, you see on YouTube of, like, people's feet that they're, like, hacking off with, like, knives, like, the dead skin. Like, you're like, my feet are terrible. And you're like, as we're Skyping right now, you just put a foot up, and I just, like, oh!
I'm a cortisone 5 model, Scotty.
I too got offered a modeling shoot. It's a foot model for foot disease, but it's still a shoot. It's still a shoot.
Yeah, it still counts. It said model on it, and it also said you should really get that checked out. Right, but it still said model first.
So you're rolling into your week with your wedding week coming up soon with swollen feet, splinters in your ass. Anything else?
That's pretty much it and all that. I mean, it's a decent set of injuries right now. I mean, but the man cave is coming along. I've put some more stuff up there. I hung up the rest in peace picture that you gave me as part of Win, Burn, Lose, or Draw.
Send me a pic of that so we can post it.
Okay. All right. With my horror stuff I have on the side.
Yeah. Oh, good. Like pictures of you.
Oh, that's so adorable. No. So adorable.
But I'm back, so we got to start posting some stuff on Instagram. We got to start doing a little bit more social media here. So send one.
All right. Yep. I definitely will. We're getting that finished up, and it'll be kind of exciting in 2 weeks and all. Bachelor life is over.
I can't wait to visit. Hopefully right after the season I can get down there sometime.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And I came so close to getting a stand-up arcade game. I wanted it so bad, but I had no way of bringing it home. It was a baseball game and all that. I used to have that when I was a kid down in South Brunswick. We had like Pac-Man and Frogger, and we had some other. It wasn't Space Invaders, but it was kind of the same thing. But it was.
We just had this conversation Saturday night. I was at my friend Mike's birthday party. It was just a little barbecue or not. We just had this conversation. Top five arcade games, like arcade, not system games, like where you went to the play at the actual arcade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Number one for me, I'm not surprised. Number one for me was NBA Jam. I remember falling in love with that game in the arcade. Then the other ones that came up were the X-Men game. That was one.
That was classic. Yeah.
The Ninja Turtles game.
Turtles in Time.
Yeah. Yep. The Simpsons game. So all three of those games were kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like you scrolled through the side and just got through different boards and levels. And then you would have the Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter argument. Those were the five or six that came up.
Yeah, I can't dispute any of them that I can think of. And what was your go-to NBA team?
Come on, bro. Come on.
The Rain Man.
Yeah. Well, what started the conversation was I was wearing the shirt from our friends at Tecmo Madison that sent me. I was wearing the Sean Kemp and Gary Payton shirt.
I still got mine.
They were deadly, because they had Detlef Schrempf too. So I would always pick usually Kemp and Schrempf, because Schrempf could hit the three but also dunk. So I would leave Gary Payton out sometimes. Sorry, Gary. but they were my go-to team in that.
That was a homer. And I'd always go for the Sixers and get my ass kicked. And all Clarence Weatherspoon could not translate to NBA Jam.
If you put the code in and got Jazzy Jeff?
I didn't know that as a kid.
Oh,
did
man.
Not know the code. Yeah, I didn't have my. I didn't have the kid and all who had the printouts. It's like, oh, I heard out about this and put it in the arcade. But whoa, I didn't have that hookup.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. That you could get Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, and I have that T-shirt also from TecmoBowlShirts.com.
Yeah, yeah.
They sent it over to us. It was a really cool gift that they sent over to us.
Still maybe my favorite thing that's come from this podcast is that shirt. But
not all the good times.
No, F the good times. But I guess before we go, I don't know. I guess I had Seinfeld on my mind. I mentioned it twice just before because I started reading this book called. Were you a big Seinfeld fan? I was very big.
Joe, I was very much in. I obviously respect him as a comedian. I never was like huge into his stand up, but I always respected his stand up. But yeah. I was big on the show.
Yeah, I guess I'm actually probably referring more to the show because the book is called Seinfeldia. Terrible title for the book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good read. It's just all basically everything about the show, how it became, when it became successful, Larry David, where the characters came from, who the characters are based off of, how it just had this subculture afterwards, and like now I'm towards the end where it's like all about like syndication, how much money they make in syndication. They made since the show went off the air, how much money do you think they've made in syndication?
Are we talking like as a group? Or a single person?
No, like, yeah, as a group. Like, how much money, how much revenue has Seinfeld generated?
I'm going to say $30 million.
Way higher, Bob.
$100 million.
Way higher, Bob.
$250 million.
Way higher, Bob.
Oh, my God. $500 million?
$3 billion Seinfeld has generated in reruns.
Holy
As far as
like, why would you ever work another day after that?
Well, that's the show. So that's the show, what it's brought in with advertising and whatnot. It makes sense because, I mean, even for me, like, you know, like it was kind of young, and I watched it. I watched it when it came on. I remember the finale and all that. I remember all that. But the early seasons, I probably really didn't see until syndication, where it was on 11 o'clock at night with The Simpsons, and then it was on at like 6 and 7 o'clock with The Simpsons and Friends. Yeah. And I've probably seen every episode 5, 6, 7, 8 times, like, at this point. And it's just amazing the effect that show, and really interesting how all the writers came, the how they did that show. The writers were like, basically, after the first season or two, those writers were coming in and they were responsible for just bringing bits of their like own life in and like trying to get them to the show. And all the writers were separate. They didn't have like a team. They all had their individual offices. And like they talked about how pitching to Larry David and Seinfeld was like the hardest thing ever. And like they would fire or just release all the writers each season. There was only one writer that really stayed on throughout the show. And they would just try to bring in a new team every season to like harvest new ideas from. But the reach of that show is insane, man. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, they did about as close as perfect as you can. There's probably a handful of episodes here like not rewatchable. And I mean, it's got to be top 5 sitcoms, no matter who you're talking with, if you have a serious conversation of best sitcoms of all time. So,
well, it's funny because, like, me and you are big Always Sunny fans, and it didn't really Always Sunny in Philadelphia, for those people who don't know, who we've also had a couple characters from, 4 characters from that show we've had on, right? 4?
4, yeah.
Yep.
Max Parents, Doyle McPoyle, and Wally, the neighbor from Mac and Dennis moved to the suburbs.
Yes. So it didn't really even like dawn on me that much until I kind of read like the descriptions of the Seinfeld crew, right? There's these 4 people that are, they do horrific things, Seinfeld, right? They people die all the time. They do horrific things to old people and take advantage of people, and they're really judgmental. And George never makes good decisions, and Jerry hates everything about people, right? And Kramer's always got a scam going on. There is a direct correlation between Always Sunny and Seinfeld, like some of it, you know what I mean? Like,
easily.
Just realizing it's a crew of people who are really selfish, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, always coming up with crazy schemes, but they all get together, and they're kind of like anti-heroes in a way. Like, the Seinfeld guy, even the last episode, even though it wasn't great, all that was about, like, punishing them for how awful they were. Right?
Well, they say they did that episode because there was always rumors they were going to take a year off and come back again. That's why they kind of... Yep. That's kind of, like that.
Yeah, that's kind of the chapters I'm at at the moment. But, like, Jerry was done. He said that season they signed beforehand, like, the beginning of the season that was done. They were talking about the script for that the last episode. They had helicopters flying over, like, the production facilities and people waiting outside. And the scripts they give, like, to do their table reads, they would shred them before. And they looked into getting ink that was not copyable. yeah, crazy.
Well, that's what they do now. I mean, I heard a story about the Avengers to keep it secret. They basically, when they have a script, they have the actors go into a tent. They're not allowed to bring in any of their phones or anything like that. It's red paper, which can't be copied or on a copier. And then once it's done, they have to hand it off. And, like, the funny thing to talk about, the guy who plays Vision, he has dyslexia. So a normal read will take him about a couple hours. So he'd get pissed off because he'll read it and hand it off. And they're like, yeah, that was a fake script. He's like, son of a bitch, now I got to go back and do another one.
That's like Game of Thrones. Apparently they just finished filming, and they filmed, like, 5 or 6 false endings. So, like, if people leak them, that's not even the real ending.
Yeah, you remember the Simpsons episode, Who Shot Mr. Burns?
Yep.
They actually animated, I think they said, 15 different people. And they even, like, threw away some. So, they're, like, people, quote-unquote, found a leak. And, it was Apu all along.
That's funny. Yeah. So, it was the Seinfeld book is fat. And it did make me think about how much, like, Always Sunny is like a almost like a darker version of that, right? Like, it's kind of crazy to think about. Like, Because there's so much space between those two sitcoms, but and just the effect it had on so many shows and what it did. Like, it talked about how NBC would, they were like in last place before Seinfeld came on, and then they just used Seinfeld to launch every other show they wanted to be successful. So, like, they'd be like, okay, whatever, Mad About You is after Seinfeld, and then it became a hit, you know, like, they just, in that Thursday time slot.
I remember Caroline in the City, which was, that, like, people were excited about, then they moved it to another night, and it instantly got canceled. Yeah, and then they had Friends come in, then they had, like, the Powerhouse Thursday.
Yeah, and then they were even talking about how every sitcom after that, like, took place in the city, you know, like, it just really changed, like a whole era for a little while. Very fascinating read if anybody really into Seinfeld or even just likes the show. It really cool. It gives you a different perspective on, like, how big that show actually is and how much impact it had on, like, just pop culture in general, just everybody's average, like, average day, some Seinfeld reference is still made, you know, among adults. But we could talk more about that next week. I think it's time to get the hell out of here.
That sounds like a plan, Scotty.
Berlo, what do you want to promote?
As I talked about earlier, a friend of mine, his wife, Christine Rush, she actually works in the travel agency with Disney. She gave us a great deal on her honeymoon, or as my wife-to-be calls it, her Disney moon. Christine is an authorized Disney vacation planner. She will hook you up and answer all your questions about the best places to go, what times, what places to eat, what resorts to stay at, and so forth. So give her a chance. Go on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Christine Magical Travel, or just Google Christine Rush Disney and she'll pop up.
All right. And I'll promote, I don't remember when the episode was, but I had a guy on by the name of Zach Holmes. Just basically a big idiot who does like a bunch of Jackass type skits and whatnot, and not even skits, just does insane things. Staples in his ears and drills holes through his ears and whatever. A million crazy things. The show that he was talking about on the podcast, Too Stupid to Die, is premiering on MTV tomorrow. So when this comes up, it'll be already on. So check those crazy, crazy bastards out if you're into that kind of thing.
I'll just interrupt. Episode 159, Zach Holmes and Muffy Bennett.
Yes. So episode 159, if you want to check him out and hear where that all came from. And to tie in a double promotion with that kind of world, Rab himself from Jackass, who was on Verbal Shenanigans. Berlo's going to look up what episode that was. He just started his own podcast. I believe episode one just came out this week. So if you like that kind of stunt humor and those kind of guys and just ridiculous videos, go check both of those things out. Berlo, what episode was Rab?
190.
190, so not that long ago. That was in this calendar year, which has been great in general. So let's get the hell out of here. Guys, if you like the show, review it, share it, listen to it, leave a review on iTunes. That helps us go up the charts. If you like a T-shirt, since we mentioned it like three times this episode, contact me. I'll just get you one. If you contact me, I will just send you a shirt. That's how desperate I am to get rid of these shirts. with that, guys, just keep listening. Go back. There's been a million awesome guests. And come say hello. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye, Berlo.
Insert song here.
I've been lately thinking about my life's time, all the things I've done and how it's been. And I can't help believing in my own mind. I know I'm gonna hate to see it end. I've seen a lot of sunshine, slept out in the rain, spent a night or two all on my own. I've known my lady's pleasures, had myself some friends, spent a time.